In 1974, a bloke called Chris Difford placed an ad in a sweet shop window for a guitarist, and that ad was answered by Glenn Tilbrook. Chucking pianist Jules Holland and drummer Paul Gunn and Squeeze were born. They went on to notch up a dozen top 40 singles and 10 top 40 albums, and Glenn Tilbrook is here now before me.
Hello, how are you?
I just thought I'd do a Steve Wright style sort of little introduction.
It really was. It was a lovely potted history of Squeeze up to a certain point.
We're thrilled that you're here. I've chatted to Chris before.
Yeah.
Tell us about you and Chris and the 80s when you look back. I mean, I read a great quote from you that you said there was a 5-year period where it was an album a year and touring all over the place.
Yeah.
And it was mental.
It was mental. I think that any band or artist, even now, still has the same thing when you're new and fresh. You work a lot. I think that's all that everyone ever wants. We didn't get any time off, and it was just draining, you know, and it turned... In the last year that Squeeze were together the first time, about the last year, it actually stopped being fun, and that's the only time it's ever happened to me. And that felt wrong.
Yeah.
Just wrong.
As well as the hard work, were the drink and drugs involved? Was a burning the candle at both ends and just...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we had circular candles there on fire right around the edge all the time. We went for it in a big way. That was enjoyable to a certain extent. Then it wasn't. Like everything, you know, it got to a point where we were headlining at Madison Square Garden and we had big shows and all that stuff. And I think we were sort of on autopilot. I don't want to sound ungrateful, because
no.
I'm certainly not.
Especially for anybody who was there at that gig and, like, you know, perhaps got proposed to at that moment.
We had amazing gigs, but, yeah. You know, the sort of spirit of the band was really rubbish.
And tell us about those gigs. Back in those days, was it like, you know, stretch limos and security and screaming fans or...?
We used to use this limo company that had all women drivers, which we thought was brilliant. So, and we would have...
So 80s.
I know.
Were they like blonde and buxom?
They all seemed to have dark hair. And so we'd sweep into the underground thing of Madison Square Gardens in 6 or 7 limos. You know, it was great fun.
What, like in the underground car park?
And then go to the backstage thing. You know, if you're 25 doing that, you know, what's not to like?
Look, it's awesome. It's what you want to be a pop star for, isn't it? It's for moments like that. We're sweeping in like loads of limos. With girls, would you have groupies? Would Squeeze a big sort of groupie band?
I think that there were some. There were some women that liked us. It's true. Yes.
1989, you met Keith Richards on holiday in Antigua, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Chatting to him, was that a bit of a turning point for you?
It was a really big moment for me because Squeeze's career, you know, at that point, it started gently going downhill. And I think, I'm not sure, we'd either just been dropped or were about to be dropped by A&M. And I met Keith Richards. He was a completely lovely bloke, real music enthusiast. And I got to play with him. We did a couple of gigs in bars and stuff. And it was lovely because I recognised that I was exactly like him. And I also met this other guy at completely the other end of the spectrum, this old ex-music hall entertainer called Ted, who used to work as part of a double act with his brother. Mm. And he stopped in the late 40s. He used to get up in this pub and do a routine, and he loved it. You know, he absolutely adored playing. And I thought, well, I'm like Ted and I'm like Keith, you know, and here I am in the middle of it. So,
and in what ways were you like? You just wanted to play music because you loved it?
Yeah, it's really important to retain the enthusiasm and to not work yourself into the ground in the way that Squeeze had done, you know, 70 years earlier.
Yes, so huge hits like Cool for Cats and Up the Junction, of course, just making you so massive.
You know, everyone would always want a hit, but there's something beyond that, you know, in just the joy of music and pursuing that and doing stuff.
How does it feel like when you write a song? When you write music, how does it feel when you get it right? I mean, is it just the best feeling in the world?
It's the most amazing feeling, yeah, because it's a completely private thing. You know, you're there in the... At least when Chris and I work together, we work separately. He gives me a lyric, and I'll go and work with that. And it's an amazing feeling to look at this piece of paper and think, wow, I can do something with this.
And you'd go off and work...
Yeah,
by yourself. Would you need to be in a certain place? Were you almost superstitious with who or what you'd need around you? Would you just need to
piano,
be
guitar, and a 4-track tape recorder? That's what I needed. And really, it doesn't change much now. I've gone all the way around the houses. I have a lovely studio. But when I demo, I work straight onto my iPad, because that's all you need is your guitar, voice, or piano to get the song across.
So have you got your own studio at your house?
No, it's a separate building. I've gone all, you know... posh with it.
Do you jam?
I can jam. I'm not a great jammer. I prefer to have a structure, you know. I start out with songs.
Okay. So. We're going to play Tempted now. Yeah. Just tell us about writing Tempted and the first bits of lyrics that you heard from Chris.
When I got it, it was an amazing lyric, and I thought, this has got to be really good. And I had the opening tune I had that came straight away, and then I spent about a week trying to get the rest of it right. And I went all around the houses. And most times I agree with people who say that writing should be a spontaneous thing, but sometimes you can use your head and it pays off. And I think Tempted is a really good example of that. Billboards in the building.
Yours and Chris's relationship over the years,
yeah,
it's been a roller coaster.
It's been love, hate, hate, love, hate, love, love, hate, love.
What's it on now? Love?
No, it's on love now.
It's a bit like pulling the petals off.
Yeah, where's it going to end?
We're on a love petal. Will the love petal remain? I've read interviews where you've gone, it's kind of like finding an acceptance. Like you accept that you've got your differences. Do you think that's come with age, you know, experience? And growing
Yeah, absolutely. All that stuff that would make me or him angry or sulk or not talk or any of that stuff, you can get by. Life's too short for all that stuff, isn't it?
And now working together. How's the vibe when you're together now?
It's great. You know, I mean, there's a good communication between us now. We're working on some new songs. We've got a project coming up on a TV series based on Daddy Baker's autobiography. That'll be next year. So we're doing new songs for that. For us, it's a great platform to actually get heard. You know, that's the hardest thing these days, is to get people beyond who already like you to hear what you do.
Yeah, because you've got a huge fan base. I mean, I remember when Chris came in, we were chatting about CDs of recordings of the gigs.
Oh, the live show. Yeah.
You've got a really big fan base. Oh, it's quite unusual, this. We don't normally do this during interviews, but I've got a DJ fan question from my colleague, Jeremy Vine, who I emailed a couple of days ago when he probably should have been prepping for his own, like, right, proper posh show and that on Radio 2. And I said, what would you ask Squeeze about the 80s? What would you ask Glenn? He said, was it hard to lose Jules from Squeeze, or was it harder to have him in the band?
It was terribly hard to lose him. I was so upset when he left, just because I thought I had that. It hadn't even occurred to me that we wouldn't always stay together, because that's how it felt to me, obviously. Different people have different things, and it's all very well for me to say, but Chris and I were doing the writing for Squeeze, and Jules was sort of very much not really a part of that. So it was really hard to replace him. We got Paul Carrack, and that worked great. And then Don Snow, and he was great too, but it's hard to maintain a spirit of a band if you keep on chopping people about. That's the longer term damage to a band.
Second question from Jeremy Vine. He says, can you play his 50th birthday next year, please, when he has a party?
Sure.
Oh gosh, you've got it. You've said it now, it's on tape and everything. So the At Odds Couple, this is the thing that you're doing. Is it November this year that you and Chris are going on tour? You're going to sing some of your solo stuff, some of his solo stuff, some Squeeze stuff, and also be raconteurs and tell stories of the band and questions from the audience as well.
Well, I'm not sure about all of that, but definitely some of that is going to happen. Yeah. What we're going to do is to embrace the difference in our characters. And I think, you know, one way that will be shown is we're going to have the stage as two completely different halves. And I suspect that Chris's half of the stage will be minimalist chic, and my half will be like, sort of, you know, I can never drive past a skip without stopping and looking at it and seeing if there's anything good in there. That's the sort of character that I am. And so we're going to exploit those differences in our personalities. And that, you know, that comes through to all sorts of different ways of thinking and the way that we are. It should be a lot more fun than it sounds.
Yeah, this, you know, you're selling it, especially with the skip mention. Was that a metaphor, or have you ever found anything amazing in a skip?
Yeah, I found loads of
what, like?
Okay, I found an old 1960s small live mixing console in a skip that I took home that had valves in it, plugged in and worked. Someone had just thrown it out.
Can I just say, ladies and gentlemen, his face has lit up now like never before. When we start talking about skips and what he's found in skips.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, incredible, though.
Yeah, people just throw out all sorts of weird stuff.
So this little tour, you're gonna be on the same stage, though. Nothing's going to kick off. There's not like a moat separating you, like James Bond, like sharks in the middle or anything.
Well, I think that sounds like it mightn't be a bad idea.
Okay, so we're going to end on your choice of a track from the 80s, and you've gone with a Prince track. Which one?
Under the Cherry Moon. I love Prince. He's one of those people that he was amazing in the 80s and he's amazing now. He hasn't diminished in his songwriting skills. You know, he went a bit funky for a while. We all have our off moments. He's back on form and he's wonderful.
A bit jazz noodly.
Yeah.
So we're going to play it now. And Glenn, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here's Prince, Under the Cherry Moon.
How can I stand to stay where I am?